Good morning, and thank you for joining me on another episode of the Roundtable Talk Show. I am your host, Sharifa Hardy. And you know what? Today has been an emotional day for me, and it's only 8 o'clock in the morning. And if you want to know what's going on with me, it's way too much to tell you. So what I invite you to do is to read the post I just shared on all of my social media pages, on my personal page, on my Ask Sharifa page, as well as the Roundtable Talk Show. But I'm not just going to leave you a little, you know, wondering. I'm going to give you the end of the story. I'm not going to give you the beginning. But what I want you to know and what I want you to take away from this is that love wins, okay? People, please keep that in mind with everything going on in the world. And that is why I bring together people who are going to be able to share their experiences in life, as well as their businesses, what they've learned. We're here to entertain you, but we're also here to educate you. So I'm going to ask you to do what I always ask you to do, and that is to go ahead and share this show, because friends don't let friends miss out on the Roundtable Talk Show. I'm going to go ahead and introduce our first guest. Our first guest is Carrie Mellon. She is an inventor. She is a creator. And there are not that many women in that field, but she has two patents. And she's going to tell us about Easy Hold. Good morning, Carrie. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you so much for having me this morning. I'm excited to be here.
You are so welcome. You look like you're excited. You're up. You're bubbly. I love your glasses. I love your smile. I was reading your bio and your story. And when I invite someone to be a guest on the show, and it may not seem like it, it may seem like there, you know, because there are a lot of people, but I always find that one thing that I'm like, oh my God, that's very interesting. And it wasn't just the patents. It wasn't just the product. It was that you didn't take no for an answer. Like, you were like, I'm going to make this better. I'm going to fix this. So let's share your story with the world. Tell us a little bit about yourself, who you are, and what you do.
Well, Carrie Mellon, I live here in Simi Valley, California. And I've been a costume designer for 35 years, motion picture costume designer, doing films and television, and worked for Nickelodeon the last 12 years. And at 60 years old, you know, the body gets a little bit tired. I have a small ranch also. My hobby is horses. And so I was out in my yard just trying to take care of the horses and sweep out the barn. And my hands were not cooperating. And I've got a little bit of arthritis, and that runs through my family. So at the time, I was thinking, gosh, is there anything to help me hold my tools? Because I want to continue my hobby. And I had, when I was deciding to be a costume designer, back in college, I had taken it, my professor had given me a test to see what kind of occupations I was suited for. Not what I would make the most money at, but I guess they give you a Briggs-Stratton test, and it tells you which environment you would thrive in, the type of people you might be around, the energy, the philosophies. And it told me two areas. It told me occupational therapy, which I'd never heard of. And it told me film and television. Well, I'd known about a little bit about film and television. I had a boyfriend at the time who worked in that industry. And I was always able to make and design just about anything. I have four sisters. We didn't have a lot of money growing up. So instead of my parents buying us clothing, they bought us a sewing machine. So I made pretty much all my own clothes growing up. So I kind of stepped into this place where, oh, these are two interesting careers. I started working as a little bit of a designer, doing clothing for commercials, and then I went to volunteer in a hospital for occupational therapy. And it was a Northridge Hospital, and it was in the spinal cord injury wing. And I was going to volunteer for about a month. But it turned into a year and a half of volunteering because it was so fascinating. The occupational therapists were helping the patients to relearn to eat and drink and brush their own hair and do artwork after traumatic injuries, brain injuries, neck injuries, and things with things like strokes, cerebral palsy, ALS, arthritis. So that was so fascinating to me that when I reached the age of, I guess it was about 58, and my thumb started giving out, I thought back to that time when I was in the hospital volunteering and thought, well, there must be in 40 years some new equipment to use. At that time, we were using these terrible little, I have a picture of one, terrible little Velcro cuffs like this that you kind of had to strap on your hand and then you sort of put the tool into it. So it was kind of uncomfortable, and you'd have your fork in there and you didn't really feel your fork, and it might get wet or dirty. Plus, we couldn't pass them out at the hospital because they weren't sanitary. So they weren't being really supplied in hospitals or therapy centers or schools. And when I went and I did an internet search to see if there was anything made since then, there was nothing. So my sisters were coming over later. I have a couple of sisters that live in my town here. We've always talked about starting a business together. One is a chef and the other is an early educator. She ran a school, a system of schools for the educational system. And we said, oh, should we do this bun recipe that we have? Our granny makes great buns. And should we make this fudge we know? And I said, earlier today, I actually could not hold on to my own broom. My thumbs were so sore. And I thought about a band that might go over my rake or toothbrush or whatever. Are you guys in? And they said, yeah, let's get started on this. So we, should I keep talking?
Yes, Carrie, we are tuning in. I got this. I'll stop you when you go too long. I'll be like, at our next guest.
So my sister said, we're in. So I got on the internet while my sisters headed to the Hollywood mask shop to find out all about silicone. Because when I was saying, I want to make this thing, I had run into the house. We were out swimming in the pool. I'd run into the house, got this silicone pot holder, cut two holes in it, slipped it over a fork and said, I want it to be something like this, right? So they went to the silicone shop. They're learning how to mix it, pour it, cure it, color it from this Hollywood mask guy. And I'm at home. What's that?
You're good.
Okay. And I was on the internet looking to see if anything like this had been invented. I'm doing a patent search. I'm doing, you know, trying to look at every hospital, every therapy center, nothing. So my sister, who's a chef, is also a fine artist. So she started drawing us up little plans and little prototypes. And they brought home the silicone and we got into the kitchen and we made 1,000 prototypes. I'll show you what they are. They're pretty darn simple, but we made 1,000 different sizes and colors and shapes. This is the whole pack of the easy holds here. And we made all these different easy holds. We stuck them on things like a tiny, tiny baby fork, all the way to a tennis racket, you know, just everything we could find. And we went to the Ventura flea market. We laid all of our equipment out on the table. We weren't selling anything. We just wanted to see what people would say. We had no idea if people were going to walk by and say, okay, that's really dumb, right? We set it all out and people start filtering by. And wives and husbands start coming by and the wives are hitting their husbands saying, you could put that on your hammer so that when you're doing the eaves, it doesn't fall on me. And then another person comes by and say, I could use that on my paint roller. Because my hands always get so tired, right? Then we had a nurse come by who said, I have a patient with ALS. Where can I buy it? I need it right now for her fork. We had a teacher come by, a special educator, who said, can you make them for pens and pencils? By the end of the day, we had so many business cards, so many people who not only were interested in it, but wanted it right then, had a patient, a parent, a student who needed them. We walked away from that swap meet with our heads were filled with information. In fact, I remember going home and for the first time, I think in my life, I had a dream where I was flying. And I think back on that because I think at that time I could really sense the freedom that owning your own business meant. I knew I was going to segue out. At that moment, I was going to segue out of working for someone else in the film industry. I loved that occupation, but I was over it and have my own business and create something that people needed.
I think that's a perfect space to just segue into our next guest. We are going to come back to you, Carrie, because I have a ton of questions for you.
Wonderful.
I want to talk a little bit more about like this just happened for you where other people, they need more assistance, which brings me to our next guest, Kim Beeler. One of the things that Kim Beeler does with Beeler Marketing is help people like Carrie
who need
to let the world know about their product. Good morning, Kim. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing great.
Glad to have you back. For everyone who recognizes Kim, you were on a show a couple of weeks ago or maybe a month ago. Yeah, like one of our first shows. So things are a little different now. We can talk about the life in the world. You know, everything back then was COVID, 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 COVID. And now it's like, okay, there are other things in the world. So how are we, how are you?
Time. Do you recognize me?
Yes, I do. I recognize your face and your smile. I try to, pay attention, especially when people come back, but you were wearing a hat.
Yes.
You
Yeah.
were, you know, wait, 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 this is so interesting. Oh my God, like things just hit me. Michael Hess was on the show yesterday.
Yes, I watched it actually. So yeah, Michael and I have spoken after the show, and yeah, he's a great guy. Yeah.
You watched that show? Because I was doing a lot of talking about you without mentioning your name. I was just
Right.
like, as soon as we started, another one of the guests was like, help me, Michael. And you were like, whoa. Welcome back, Kim. How have you been? How's life been since the last time?
Doing better now. I have May's a big month for Beeler Marketing. I'm based in Lake Oswego, Oregon, which is just about 7 miles south of Portland, Oregon. And things are starting to open back up here, which is nice. I think Portland's in Multnomah County. I'm in Clackamas County. And so the phases, that's how states are opening up, I guess, is in phases, county by county. So it's nice to see business picking back up. It seems like there's a different energy in the world right now. It's more positive. I was just talking to a colleague yesterday about positive psychology, and it's tough to be, positive when you're in quarantine, right? And you're isolated. And but I'm used to working, from a home base, remotely. In fact, I've been telling people for years, I feel like I'm more productive working from home. I'm very independent, very self-disciplined. You do have to have self-discipline to work from home. But yeah, this month is a big month for me. It's my 18th year in business, and I work with a lot of small to mid-sized companies, a lot of consumer product good companies, get their message out into the world, mostly through media relations. But I also help with content development for their own social media or collateral pieces, advertising, internal and external. So I love what I do. I love being an entrepreneur. Yeah, I've worked for other people and I've worked for myself, and I love the fact that now I get to work with a variety of businesses with a niche sort of in the specialty products, organic, natural, and kind of environmentally sustainable industry. And animal welfare is kind of a, personal passion. So I try to support those causes and messages when I get a chance to. But yeah, getting back to the environment we're in right now, I love seeing the fact that we're all essential. I think that was one of my messages last time, was this concept of essential business and non-essential business. And I love that we're all essential and all of our incomes are essential, and it's great to see, business opening back up again. So I'm excited. I'm excited and happy to see that.
But hopefully people will be careful. In our little town, we have a lot of COVID. I personally have experience with several people that have had COVID. So let's be careful when we get back to business.
It
should be a new normal. I'm also seeing that. Like, I think a lot of businesses are reorganizing in a way. They're looking at their business plan and, looking at going back to work cleaner, smarter. And yeah, we know COVID-19, a coronavirus, is still out there. And so, yeah, we need to be aware of that. But just in life, there's a lot of scary things, and we have to maybe learn how to. I brought up last time as well as an example, we have gun violence, right? And we can't let gun violence and mass shootings prevent us. We can't shut schools down. But we can operate maybe smarter, like who we let into the schools and engaging maybe in more e-learning opportunities. One thing I've loved in this last, when this hit in February, March, and then the shutdown started happening. I mean, I live in a neighborhood where literally the streets were like becoming highways. And it was nice to have the neighborhood streets back. The wildlife were flourishing. You know, I think I read that accidents, you know, automobile accidents were down.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, I think I always look for a silver lining in tough times. And that's, you know, there's some benefits. And again, let's get this, you know, shutting business down temporarily, okay, is one thing. But this ongoing, you know, one winery just opened up here in Oregon. It was shut down for 66 days. And I just feel like, okay, and they got back to work, but before they did, they installed a state-of-the-art HVAC system that uses ultraviolet light to kill pathogens.
Wow, that's amazing. So,
yeah, they want their patrons to feel like, listen, you know, we're doing as much as we can, not just cleaning surfaces and, you know, having tables maybe 6 feet apart and closing the tasting bar down, but you know, they went the extra mile to make their patrons and their employees feel like, hey, you know, we're doing everything we can so you can feel safe and wearing the mask and all that. So
yes, we definitely have to be safe. And I can tell you one thing from having you on the show the last time, Kim, you're definitely authentic. you're definitely opinionated. And I love those things about you, you know, because one of the things that we discussed on the last show was the whole, and that again has been a month, was reopening. And just to kind of bring the audience in where I am and where Kim is because where Kim lives, there aren't as many cases as where I live in LA County or other places in the nation. And yeah. So when our discussion was around, if it's not equal or equal as far as cases, how can we best, you know, make things work for everyone? So maybe things, I think Montana, I think we picked on Montana all that day for some reason, but it was just like, you know, if there aren't cases here, why are they shut down? You know, and I know it's to keep them safe and keep those cases from coming in, but, you know, allow people to practice businesses. But my main focus is no matter what, love wins. And I don't know how many times I'm going to say that during the course of this show, but that's my theme and it's Friday and that's what I'm feeling. But I do want to introduce my next guest, who I'm about to take her shirt right off of her. I'm just give me that, okay? Just kidding. But Tay Daniels is the CEO and founder of It's VA, and she specializes in helping people in the wedding industry with virtual assistants. Good morning, Tay. How are you?
Good morning. I am good. How are you? I'm so glad to be here.
Did you wear that shirt for me?
I did. I brought it just for you.
Thank you. And it's so interesting because I have a shirt that I love and I love to wear it and speaking engagements, and it actually says empowered women empower women. Yes. So it was just like, oh, I love that, you know. And the thing is so cool is like it's pink. You know what I mean? The shirt's pink, your outfit's pink, your lipstick is pink, and you are like this girly girl. Not I love to judge people. That's what I do in my chair. I just judge people. Right. I do. But you're like, what? And they're like, okay, she's a girly girl, but what is she doing? And you're like busy empowering women. That's great. Okay, tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do.
So I run a virtual assistant company that specializes in assisting wedding vendors all over the United States with the back end of their business. I started my company in 2016. I was 7 months pregnant and I did not want to go back to a 9-to-5 job that I had no interest in. And I knew that I had always wanted to be in the wedding industry. I just didn't know how I was going to put those pieces together. And at the time, I had no business experience. I had dropped out of college. I had no degree. I had maybe $100 to my name. I had just gotten married. I'm pregnant. And I'm like, I'm about to start a company. And so it was scary. I was terrified. And then through my business, I mean, things have obviously evolved from then until now. And now my business is way different than I ever imagined in the best ways. But I went through a very ugly, nasty divorce. I went through being in an abusive relationship and just trying to be a single mom, trying to run a company, trying to figure out how all these pieces are going to be put together. And then I transitioned my company into being that I do want to empower, I mean, people in general, not just women, but obviously the wedding industry is saturated with more women. And so I just want people to know that you don't have to have all the money. You don't have to have a degree. You don't have to have all the things in place to be a business owner. And if you have the mindset and you are driven and this is what you want to do, then I want to coach you to do that in your business and not just, you know, slide by like, oh, I'm making a couple $100 and I'm happy. No, like I want your business to take off. I want you to hit those goals. So I teach women like mindset and how to overcome things in your life that are holding you down, that are in your personal life, in your business life, and transition that into being the CEO of your company and having a team and just being happy, being an entrepreneur pretty much.
You remind me so much of myself. My cousin is always telling me that. She's like, Sharifa, you just get an idea in your head and you're like, you just do it. Like 7 months pregnant and you think you're like, it's a good idea to start a business. Why not wait? Why not say, you know what, when the baby, I'm not judging this part. I'm not judging, but like, you know, cause people tend to do that. They put a certain date in their mind. Like, okay, when the baby is born or when the baby is 6 months or when life is perfect or when I have the money in the bank, but you're like, nope, I'm 7 months pregnant. I want a different life. I want to do that. Like, what was the, how would, I don't
you know why women feel like building their nests when they're like that. You know what? She's building her nest right now. And some women would be out just shopping for baby clothes, but not her. She is a true entrepreneur building her nest.
Yeah. So I tell people that if you wait for the perfect time to start anything in your business, you will never start. There is no perfect time. That does not exist. So if you have an idea and you are driven enough that you want this, go for it now, because we could sit back and say, oh, we can plan for this. We can wait till you have this many followers, this much in your bank account. But realistically, take action now. So whenever someone says to me, you know, anything like, what is your best business advice? My best business advice is just start. Who cares? If you fail, you now know how to transition to start again and what you should and shouldn't do. Their failures are just lessons. So start it. If it happens, it takes off. That's great. If it doesn't happen the way you envisioned, it's going to happen the right way regardless. So.
I've been telling people what's been weird for me and is that in doing shows for 60 days, like I've quarantined my way through all of these shows, right? But I began to see themes, you know, and it's like you, Tay, and you, Carrie, you're both people who just said, you know what, we're going to do it. Like when Carrie was telling us how she came up with Easy Hold, there wasn't a lot of, you know, she just did it. You know, she just went out there, got her sisters together.
Rolled one thing after the other. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes. And I think that's beautiful. And then when I look at Kim is one of those people who can say, okay, you're doing this, you're doing this. Let me help you. Let me support you. Let me go out there and tell the world about what you're doing. Let me help you build this business. And that's what it takes, us coming together. Now, I won't just say, just because Tay wore that shirt, that is just women, right? We want to focus on the men. We want to speak to the men as well. We do acknowledge you. We know you.
We need them.
So I'm going to introduce my next guest, Rakim Sabri. And he is an entrepreneur. He is a motivational speaker, author, personal finance consultant, and you are a guest on the Roundtable Talk Show with a whole lot of women. So be aware. Good morning. How are you? I wanted to let you know in case you hadn't noticed. Yeah.
No, I definitely noticed. Good morning. Good morning. And just a lot of good information, I think, has been stated already. So, you know, Tay's point around just getting started is so crucial, I think, for people who want to embrace entrepreneurship. And I consider myself a hybrid entrepreneur. So when I heard Kim earlier mention, you know, that she had worked for people and she had worked for herself and she likes working with people, I think that's true to who I am too. And that I think most people, when it comes to entrepreneurship, think that they have to give up their 9 to 5 completely and then just dive headfirst into entrepreneurship with no plan, and then, you know, you have to deal with the rebound of that financially or what have you, but there's that middle ground, right? And I'm trying to create awareness around what hybrid entrepreneurship looks like. So, you know, you work your 9 to 5, you get your salary, you do what you have to do in the daytime, and then in the time that you're not working, from, you know, 5 p.m. until, right, you're working on your business. My outputs are varied, right? Like we talked about, you know, financial empowerment. It's a passion of mine. I wrote a book on it. Mentoring, it's a passion of mine. I wrote a book on it. I delivered a TED talk on financial empowerment. So, you know, speaking, I co-founded a nonprofit. So there's so much opportunity. And I think a lot of people They just kind of dismiss all the hours that exist outside of that 9-to-5 structure, because it's like, oh, you know, and I've experienced it, right? You work all day, you come home, you're tired, you sit on the couch, you don't want to do anything, you eat, you watch TV, and then you start all over again. And so I think at this stage in my life, where I've been able to maintain kind of a focus, a dual focus, and being high performing in one environment, but then come home and deliver that same high level of performance to what's important to me, and building something that is going to last. Legacy is very important to me. Being an example is something that's very important to me. Being a trailblazer is something that's very important to me. And then taking advantage really of maximizing where, like, my station in life. So I just turned 30, May 15th. And, you know, to look at, thank you.
You grow now, you officially grow.
Right. You know, being able to speak to people who are my age and younger and say, hey, like, you don't have to waste your 20s doing like random nothingness, right? Like, you can be constructive, and so that you don't have to go through your 30s in a recovery mode, that you're going through 30s in building mode. Like, I feel so confident entering this stage of life because of the foundation that I laid early on. And I think a big part of that, I don't remember who said they like to focus on mindset, but a big part of that is mindset, right? And understanding long-term planning, and understanding that, you know, you have to sacrifice a little bit now so that you can reap the rewards of that later on. And that's been my life, you know, believing that whatever it is that I want to achieve is possible, and going after it with, you know, full passion, full energy. Doesn't matter how tired I am, doesn't matter how much I worked before. Just, you know, believing that it's possible and executing.
Hear, hear.
You glossed over a little bit the book. You just said, I wrote a book about it. You're just so calm. You know, with all this emotions in the room, you're just like, I wrote a book about it. Do you mind if we share the information?
No, absolutely not. I have a copy of my book, actually.
You just so happen to have that copy right there.
I had it prepared just in case. So this is actually my second book. It's called Financially Irresponsible. And what I do is I challenge people to really inspect their views on personal finance as it relates to accepting what is considered status quo around how you manage your money, but also, you know, taking the initiative to do research and how, you know, what works for you, right? Because I think when it comes to finance and personal finance in particular, there's a blanket approach that's usually kind of pushed out there, right? You save your money, you invest your money, you limit spending, you find ways to increase income, but it's not specific to what that individual circumstances are at that particular moment. And so I frequently say, you know, personal finance is personal. And so the behaviors that I exhibit at 21 may not work for me at 30. And in between 21 and 30, certainly there's a learning curve, right? There's an increase in income. There's an increase in responsibilities, possibly debt. And so you're taking on more. At 21, you know, I didn't own a house. At 30, I own a house. So that's a big difference in responsibility. That's a big difference in, you know, how my income is allocated. And so I think when people, especially people who exist in a poverty state financially, they are looking for ways to climb out of that. It becomes frustrating, right? You go through a point of just kind of desperation, like, I'm just looking to survive. I can't think about thriving. And I want to take the closest, easiest piece of advice. And so I'm just going to save my money and save my money and save my money and not understand that, you know, it's a losing battle, right? If you're just saving your money and you're putting it in the bank because you're competing with inflation, you're not growing your money.
That's a really interesting statement right there.
Yeah.
You got to make your money work for you. Yeah.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, there's a lot of people who are intimidated by the idea of investing, particularly in the stock market, particularly in this day and age, right, where we've seen incredible hits to the stock market, but we've seen incredible gains too. And so the people that are intimidated, a lot of times they're trying to time the market and figure out, well, you know what, like, I'm going to stay in this long and then I'm going to pull out. And that doesn't work either. And so I just think it's important for us to emphasize financial education, because when you have the foundation and building blocks of what financial education looks like and what best financial practices look like, you can kind of make informed decisions at, you know, whatever turn. You know, you get hit with a situation like this, right? You're not working, but you've been paying yourself first for years. So you have money put away that you can kind of weather this storm. Or understanding how to leverage credit and what the benefits of leveraging credit look like, not as an extension of income, but as a tool. And there's just so many other things, planning for retirement. And so I touch on a lot of these things. I introduce terms to people that that maybe did not have that exposure. I've worked in financial services for close to 10 years now. And just a lot of banking jargon and a lot of experiences that I've witnessed, right, and interacting with customers who are wealthy and customers who are not so wealthy and how they manage their money, and really kind of synthesizing that as much as I can into 200 pages and an experience through my lens, right? Through my perspective and saying, hey, you know what? Maybe this is considered financially irresponsible in this arena, but maybe this is actually financially responsible in another arena. Mm-hmm. And I'll give you guys a solid example. The average American has 3 credit cards. It's like 2.7 credit cards. And then I talk about how I have like 9 credit cards. And people are like, what? Like, you know, you're a financial consultant, financial, I don't like the term guru, but people like to assign it to me. And you have 9 credit cards? Like, why? And I'm like, well, I understand how credit works. And I understand how to use credit. And so for me, it's not a liability to have that much credit, because I'm not using it to go buy, you know, a new pair of shoes and clothes. And, you know, I'm not using it to supplement my income. But when you look at what's considered a best practice, it's technically not considered a best practice. And so I challenge people to look at things a little bit differently when it comes to their relationship with money.
Mm-hmm. I think that's excellent. I think you said a lot and you covered a lot of topics. I think we're going to have you back as well. So you can come back.
I got some questions for him.
We're going to get to your question, but first we get to my question, which is the benefit of being me. But one of the things that you touched on was, it's like, I have to be careful. And that's why I love doing a roundtable talk show, because I'll make a statement. Like I'll say, you know, because Tay said her philosophy is just start. I always tell people my philosophy is I go with the Nike motto, just do it. Like I tell people, just do it, right? And then they come back and they're like, Sharifa, I took your advice and I quit my job. And I'm like, that's not what I said. I did not say quit your day job. Don't put that on me. What I said was start it, do it. Focus on the business. But people like Rakeem was saying, they feel like they can't do both, you know, but you have to be able to have something to start a business. And that's why the majority of people who start a business, they're out of business in a couple of months. They do what I call a Hail Mary pass. Like they take the $200 in their bank account and they're like, I'm in business, support me, buy my stuff. And nobody does. And then they're out of business. That's why I love speaking to people like Kim, who's been in business for 18 years. You know, it's like marriage, right? And I've been divorced twice. So believe me, I know what I'm talking about. Like you go through those stages. Like you're like, okay, we made it to 2 years. Good. You know, we made it to 5 years. Good. Okay. 7, you know. So Kim, how do you get to 18 years? What do you learn?
You know, I grew up in rural Oregon, and my grandfather and my dad were farmers. And mm-hmm. So, you know, one, I think at a young age, I had these mentors and I didn't even really realize it, but I see building a business like growing onions. We had an onion farm, and you start.
Never heard that before, but go ahead.
You start by, you know, with an idea, right? You're tilling the ground, you're getting it prepared, then you plant the seeds, and then you nurture that ground, you protect the plants, and they grow, and then there's harvest. And so you can't just go all in like that just do it. You know, yeah, you do have to have that mindset, but you don't quit your day job unless, you know, when I started my business, though, I had 2 back-to-back layoffs, and mm-hmm. it was right after 9/11, and a lot of agencies were losing business, and the last guy I worked for called me upstairs and said, Kim, do you have a minute, after 7 weeks of working there? I'm like, you're kidding me, right? Mm-hmm. But his advice was, Kim, you know, I was a business reporter for years in the Portland metro area here in Oregon. And he goes, you've got all these business contacts. If you just get a few of those people to work for you, go to work with you, they're going to pay you more than anybody like me will ever pay you. And so I just did it. And I was afraid, though. I was in my early 30s. I'm like, I've only been in this PR marketing industry for a couple of years. I've got more to learn. And I was dating a guy at the time. And he says, what's your greatest fear? And I said, I guess failure. And he goes, okay, let's just say that happens. It doesn't work. Go back to work for somebody. You know, that's always an option. And I thought, yeah, you're right. So I got a business license. I called Kettle Foods, was my first call. And they hired me on the spot. And I kicked myself all the way home saying I didn't ask for enough money. The next month I raised my rates and they're like, you're raising your rates already? And I said, hey, I was just trying to show you, you know, the value in hiring me. But that's been the hardest part, you know, for me. One of the hardest parts is evaluating my services and what I should charge.
Mm-hmm. I want to discuss that. Didn't mean to cut you off, Kim, but I don't want to go in another direction because I want Carrie to have the opportunity to ask her question.
Yeah, when you say you do marketing for companies that give back, you did some animals and then some healthcare products. How did you decide to go into that direction with marketing? Because now the world runs on marketing. My business wouldn't go anywhere unless there were people like you. How did you choose your niche?
You know, I didn't really choose it. I think it sort of chose me in terms of just the opportunity of the first agency I worked with. Their niche was organic and natural foods. And that was back in 1999, early 2000s, when organic was just becoming a new thing.
Right.
So part of my job was to educate consumers on the differences between a mainstream product and why should I pay more for organic? That was, and so again, I was in my early 30s, you know, and as that grew, as we all grow and evolve, right? My passions became part of my niche, right?
Again,
started by the agency I was working for, that was their niche. So I made connections in that world with Nature's Path Foods, Endangered Species Chocolate, Bob's Red Mill, and then Willamette Valley Vineyards, one of my clients right now. I was reporting on their business back in my 20s when I was a business reporter. So I feel like in a way, life has come full circle for me. I started as a journalist and PR people were reaching out to me. Now I still get to write, but I'm the one as a resource for reporters, you know, coming in. And I love that I work with a variety of businesses. It's not just that one niche. I've had roofing, you know, clients and
Do you have an Easy Hole client, Kim?
I do not, but if you want help, I'm happy to do that. You know, I help my clients with local and national throughout North America. So
let's talk.
Yeah, let's talk, definitely.
I'm just doing a little meddling and matchmaking. I don't know.
I love what you said. You kind of came full circle because that's something that I think entrepreneurs need to really think about. Because when in my early 20s, when somebody told me film and industry and occupational therapy, I went through a whole career, 35 years in the film industry, and then landed back in occupational therapy. Who would have ever thought I would develop an occupational therapy tool when I was told in my 20s, this is an industry that, you know, you'd be good in. So listening to that intuition when you're a kid, and I think, Tay, you mentioned something about that too, right?
I think was the one who talked about the 20s and the 30s.
Primary
focus, but I think that's part of the overall theme, because one of the things that I've been telling people is I was that kid that drove my mother crazy, because I was like, Mom, why did they do that? Why did they say that? Why? And she was like, do you ever stop talking? And it's like, now I'm a talk show host. You know what I mean? It came all the way full circle that now I earn a living talking, you know? So you never know.
I'll comment too. I think, you know, I started in banking in 2011 and I never thought that I would end up in banking. I always grew up, I wanted to help people. I wanted to be like a counselor, psychologist, psychiatrist. And I thought that was the only way to kind of like fuel that passion, right? To go through that process. I ended up in banking, and it's like completely different world. And now talking to people on financial empowerment, making a difference, right? Letting them explain to me what their anxieties are about money management, their personal money management, why they don't want to deal with credit, why they can't save. And it's just like, I'm doing what it is that I wanted to do, but not in the way that I imagined it happening. And so I think, you know, echoing everything that everyone said, that intuition, that passion that you kind of identify as a child, you find your way back into it. It's just, you know, life experience is going to kind of shift you, and I think color the experience so that you can then be able to share with other people. I tried initially when I started writing my book, I didn't want it to be about finance. I was like, I do not want to be that guy. I do not want to be the finance guy. Like, don't pigeonhole me into just one area of expertise, if you will. But then I did an exercise with a consultant, and he said to me, you're in an airport, right? And somebody walks up to you and they say, hey, I'm in trouble. I need you to come speak on a topic for me in the next half an hour. I'll pay you whatever it is that you want. What are you speaking on? And I was like, financial empowerment. He says, that's what you need to write about. So when I wrote the book and you know, started to pour out that passion, right? It was just kind of like, wow, like I should have done this. And why was I so opposed to doing this? But, you know, Kim, you said something earlier too about, you know, that process of farming, right? And I took up gardening, I think 3 years ago. So that resonated with me because I understand like the process and the curing and the grooming for that fruit. But when I wrote my book, I had a big boom, right? It was exciting. You know, we're talking about marketing and just the value that marketing plays in creating awareness. I had a big boom. I created an email list, like just everything, right? I did a TED talk the day after I launched my book. I was just like, this is going to get a great turnout. And then there was a lull. So I published my book in December. There was a lull, January, February, March, April. And then this month has been the biggest month of sales for me since the first month that I released my book. And that is due to, like you said, you know, staying the course, being disciplined, continuing to market and you know,
and it's timely, really timely, because people are running out of money. They need to figure out how to make the most of their money.
Well, that's definitely true too. Yeah. That's definitely true too. I think, you know, people don't stay the course long enough. Like they don't understand the groundwork involved and kind of setting, like I said, long-term planning, setting yourself up for the future. And the value of marketing, I think, you know, we all have spoke to the value of marketing, especially social media, personal branding, you know, getting in every avenue that you can.
Let me just say this, and not to cut you off, but we got 15 minutes left. And I want to say this to you, because I don't know how old Tay is, but I'm kind of assuming that you're one of the younger people on the show. And I think you were talking about your book and the law and the sales. But I also believe that when we're ready and we're ready to step into that glory to a certain extent, then the world responds and the mm-hmm. world resonates at that level. Mm-hmm. Because one of the things that you said when we were discussing, you know, what we were meant to do is you said, I want to help people. And it's like, okay, but I believe, and I do a lot of speaking engagements in the holistic and metaphysical world. And the reason I talk to them is because I talk to them about finances and I talk to them about businesses. And what I found is a lot of the people in that industry or in that world were in corporate America, and they got this disdain in their mouth about finances and money, and that you know, they kind of feel like, no, if I make too much money, that makes me bad. You know, it goes to the whole belief that money is the root of all evil, and it's not. It's the love of money, right? So you're supposed, I'm one of those people who believe in scripture when they say, it is my pleasure to give you the kingdom, that we're not supposed to be broke. So we need people like you to help other people understand finances, because in the back in the day, the old people used to say, romance without finance is a nuisance. So it's like, you gotta fix your money issues in order to have the life that it's good to love everybody and it's good to, you know, want to help everybody. But if you don't have money to help other people, then you're not being of service to what you came here to do. So that's my Friday sermon.
Sharifa, you know, so funny about that is the first chapter of this book is titled Money is Not the Root of All Evil. And so I go into, you know, that scripture and, you know, saying that is misquoted, but I also, my follow-up to it was the story in Matthew around the 10 talents, right? And how one of the servants of God decided that they wanted to bury their talent instead of multiply it, and how God expressed, you know, his wrath in that action. And so, like you said, that we have an obligation to take our talents, take our opportunity, take our money and grow it, and not feel shameful for, you know, having a desire to acquire money and to grow our money. So,
but how can you help people with no money? I'm just gonna say, I tell you, people want clarity. Like, to do this show costs me about, just the show, probably $2,000 a month, right? Just to present you this show, right? But I do it because I have to help people. Now, people are like, where does that come from? I do a lot of Facebook ads, a lot of Google advertising, Instagram advertising, you know, YouTube advertising. It costs me to pay Zoom. It costs me additional $40 just to have the Zoom Facebook live feature. But that's important to me because I want people to watch you and I want people to learn from you live. That's what I want. So that's what I paid for. But unless I can receive the money from somewhere else, how can I help more people? How can I be of service to more people? But I think that's what Kim was talking about, and Carrie and Tay. And we're going to go back to Tay because I feel like we need to give Tay some more love. But we were talking about what we do naturally, but isn't what we do naturally our talents that God gave us?
Probably. Yeah. You know, what's interesting listening to Tay and Kim and is talking about how there is a time for every business. And we're having a really difficult time in the world right now. George Floyd, that's a terrible, terrible, but it's bringing awareness to something that we have to dive deep into right now. I'm a partner in a company called Women's Economic Ventures, which talks about all kinds of women's issues around building businesses. But I'm also a partner in a company that helps to bring awareness to different issues. Well, we're going to be out on a street corner tonight in Thousand Oaks with signs saying, do not remember George Floyd, right? Do not forget George Floyd. Let's remember what happened. There are these times where we can catapult not only our businesses, but our thought processes forward, like money. It takes money to make money. Let's think about that. And right now in this time when nobody has money, you really have to think seriously, buy that book. You know, Kim's talking about sustainable businesses and animal. Well, we had that horrible woman who is strangling her dog because she's afraid of an African-American man. You know, we need to think about animal welfare. We need to do marketing about animal welfare, about everything like this. And it kind of ties in with what's going on in our personal community with this horrible. In fact, my boyfriend is a producer, and he produced a film called The Wretched, and it's a super scary film. Well, it was supposed to come out in the theaters. What happens? All theaters close down. So IFC decides to open it up in 2 drive-in movie theaters. It made such a huge splash that now all these drive-in movie theaters are coming back into existence. So all of our businesses, while it seems like a terrible time, it's actually a great time to catapult our businesses working on the social issues we do. Animals, making money, you know, and marketing and empowering women empowering women, giving them confidence to move forward.
Okay. I loved it. I love what you had to say.
Times like this make you look at your business and go, okay, you know, I'm struggling. What can I do better? You know, I've even looked at my own business and I've seen there's this growth in the digital arena. And, you know, so I'm trying to find partners so I can get, you know, smarter and start tracking the marketing that I'm doing for my clients and showing, hey, guess what? I didn't just get you in this magazine, but that article, you know, if you can follow somebody who clicks on something and then goes to your website and makes a purchase, right?
Absolutely.
You can tie the PR value to sales.
That is so wonderful. That's what we had to do. I love what you were saying, Kim. I also love what you were saying, Carrie, because that was the gist of my post I made this morning. With all these things going on in the world, love still wins. We're people like the guest on my show today are here to help you. Tay, I don't even know what's on your mind, you know, but I'm just going to give you 5 minutes just to have a therapy session with us. Join the conversation, Tay. Jump right in there.
Okay, so yes, I'm probably the youngest on the show. Started my company at 23. I'm now 27. I think that finance is so important in so many areas of your life. And like you were like I think everyone kind of mentioned this, that the way that you think of money and the way that you're brought up to think about money, if you grew up maybe less fortunate or poor, then your mindset is that people with money are evil or cruel or whatever it is. So then you grow up thinking that, and that's your mindset. Well, you have to shift that mindset. Money itself is nothing more than energy. That's all it is. It's not anything more than energy. So you need to fix your mindset around money if you want to make money. And for me, I want to make money because I want to take care of other people. I want to be good for the world. I want to take care of family. There are reasons that I want to be and will be wealthy. And it has nothing to do with being evil. It's so that I can do the things that I want to do to help other people. So for me personally, my child is half Black. My fiance is Black and he's a cop. So for me, it's that
I just want to hug you, like, oh, this is okay.
And this is the thing, we have these conversations all the time that I am terrified to have children grow up of color in this world, and that is sickening. I am sick that I have to think that more. That my husband or my fiance goes to work, and he's of color, and he's a cop, and he's dealing with all these things. He wants to go on our neighborhood run to exercise in the morning, and I won't let him do it. Like, why do we live like that? Mm-hmm. For me, money is so that I can help, you know, people realize that money is not evil and that you can use your money for good things. And that's why more people with that mindset need to be rich, need to have more money so we can have a happier world.
Mm-hmm. And there's going to be an election coming up, and you have to get some money behind the people that you want to be elected to. Yeah.
There's a lot going on. I know that's why I just launched my $50,000 production fundraiser. It's a Facebook fundraiser. And if you're interested in making your contribution, it is on my page, on the Roundtable Talk Show page, as well as the Asharifa page. And so I'm using that money to be able to reach more people with the Roundtable Talk Show, to help more entrepreneurs and business owners garner exposure for their business, and just to help more people. Now, we are coming down to the last few minutes of the show. You all were amazing. I think you were just so amazing. I hope all of you decide to come back, to return to the show. Go to asharifa.com, grab your seat today, because we have plenty of people who are coming out and saying, you know what, I want to help people. I want to show people how to do what they want to do and to be of service. Now, what I love to do at the end of every show is just allow my guests the opportunity to speak directly to everyone who's watching live, as well as everyone who's watching the show in the archives, and let them know what you want them to take away from your appearance. And so we're going to start with you, Carrie.
Well, I would like everyone to know exactly what my product is and how it might help you in your own home. If you have a parent with arthritis, ALS, Parkinson's, Huntington's, and they can't hold on to a toothbrush, this is how you hold on to an electric toothbrush with no grip. Or if you have limb loss or finger loss, or you're a veteran that needs help holding on to objects, you can hold on to a toothbrush, a fork, a knife, a paintbrush. You're an ex-drummer that has carpal tunnel. You do not need any grip at all. So this is easy hold. And whether it's a paintbrush, a toothbrush, or a broom, you'll be able to hold on to any object. And you can find us at easyhold.com. That's easy with a Z.
Carrie, is it going to help me hold on to a man? Like, that's what I want to know.
No, I've been married 3 times.
When you solved that problem, then you did call me. Okay, 562-822-0965. Okay, when you solved that one, come back to me. Tay, what do you have for us?
I just want to tell people that if you are an aspiring entrepreneur, just start. If that's what you want to do, jump into it, give it everything you have, and fix your mindset, because that's going to fix your life in all areas. You don't have to learn all the business, but fix your mindset, and that can take you in so many directions, and you don't have to have a plan, just let it happen. And yeah, if you want to find me, I'm at itsvatay.com.
I love it. I love it. I love it. This America is what we call the future. See, I love it. They keep talking about these kids and they doing all this stuff. You are our future, Tay. So thank you for being here today. Rakim, what do you have for us?
I like to leave people with the quote, pay yourself first. So it's a discipline. Whenever you receive any income, you take a portion of that income, you put it away for you. Before you pay anything else, right? That is a mantra that I live by. It's a mantra that I try to share with everybody else. And then also just believe in the impossibility of impossibility. Everything is possible. And that's something that I stand behind. If you want to find me, my website is rakimsabri.com. I'm also on Instagram and Twitter at rakimsabri.
Where can we find your book?
My book is available on Amazon. It's Financially Irresponsible. You can type in my name, it'll come up. You can go to my website. If you type in my name in Google, it'll come up. I mean, we're virtually synonymous.
You're famous.
But I didn't hear what Tay said.
I said I'm in a book club with a bunch of women, and we're going to need that book ASAP.
Awesome, awesome.
See, you got the women behind you. The women are like, get this book out here. We need to learn about finances. That's what we're here to do. Take us home, Kim.
Well, my grandma used to say, you don't solve money problems with money. So I do think that ultimately it comes down to us, right? To take charge of our lives, our businesses. Are we happy in our jobs? If not, change it. Do something different. And if you fail, pick yourself up. You know, I grew up with horses too. And my mom said, if that horse bucks you off, you get back on. You know, so that's why I'm opinionated. I'm a Tom girl and I grew up in a farm. And getting to marketing, I love what I do. I think if you find your passion and you turn that into your job, you'll never work a day in your life. And I feel like I'm sort of retired yet working at the same time. I love it. And I get to go hang out and walk my dog. And I can tell you, when I'm out walking my dog, that's when I come up with so many great ideas, like, oh, I gotta pitch that to that news source and come up with headlines in the shower.
Good point.
Yeah, so I'll just leave you with, if you don't control your brand, someone else will.
Amen. I love that. And I think it goes back to what you said earlier, Kim, about being surrounded by mentors. Like you said, grandma said, and then mama said, I'm like, you didn't know all that time they were preparing you for life. And that's why we need more mentors. We need more grandmas. That's what we need. I can't wait. My kids are 23 and 26, and I can't wait to be a grandmother. I'm just going to go take my little baby and run away. But I digress. I enjoyed myself. I hope all of you enjoyed yourselves. I learned so much. I learned about new products, new information. I want to thank you for being a guest on today's episode of the Roundtable Talk Show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I also want to thank everyone who tuned in live to watch the show. I really appreciate you. But I also thank everyone who watched the show in the archives. Remember, if you don't take anything else from my message today, love wins. At the end of the day, love wins. Please support our guests. They are here today giving up their time and energy, resources, information, and knowledge to be able to help you and support you. So support them. In the post, you will see their websites, their information. Go to their websites, follow them on social media, make your first tweet. Sharifa says hi. If you are interested in being a guest on the show, please visit the website at asksharifa.com. Until Monday morning, everyone have a safe and a blessed weekend. Bye,
man. Bye-bye.
Bye.